Harris and for Dick Gordon. This is The Connection. What are we to make of a prime minister who is the single richest person in the country he leads and the 40th richest person in the world, who runs the country as if it were his personal private company, complete with a budget minister who rewrites the laws to benefit his boss, who controls all three of the private television networks, decriminalizes many of the crimes he and his associates have been accused of, and then blows up when anyone asks him about it? Well, by now you may have guessed that we're talking about Italy's Silvio Berlusconi, who will be visiting these shores next week. He is arriving on the heels of an ongoing flap between Italy and Germany over whose government is corrupt and whose tourists are, in the words of an undersecretary for tourism no less, unattractive, beer-belching bores who clog up Italian beaches. Connection listeners, Silvio Berlusconi's way with words and way around rules makes for great copy. But now that he's president of the European Union, what's at stake? And what does Berlusconi's popularity at home tell us about Italy and Italians today? Our number is 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. And I'm joined on the line now by Maurizio Molinari. He is former diplomatic correspondent for the Italian newspaper La Stampa, and now that paper's New York correspondent. Maurizio, thank you so much for being with us. Nope, sorry, we don't have Maurizio quite yet, so we're going to go to James Walston, who is on the line from Rome. He is professor of international relations at the American University in Rome. Hi, James.
Good afternoon. Good morning to you.
Good morning. Yes, exactly. We're summoning everyone from around the world for this program. So let me ask you, if you will, to give us a sketch. You were listening a moment ago as we had some of the highlights or perhaps lowlights of Mr. Berlusconi's career and persona. Tell us about him. Is he a self-made man or did he come into inherited wealth?
No, he came from a relatively poor background, low-middle-class background. He is a brilliant salesman. He saw his way to making a lot of money in the development of Milan in the 1970s. He was very close with the city government, run by the Socialist Party for the most part under Bettino Craxi. And he then, the end of the 70s, when the media laws relaxed in Italy and you were allowed to have private broadcasters, he was the first person to see his way to producing national networks. And the late 70s, early 80s, he put together what was in practice illegal, but he was able to get around it, three national networks by linking up local broadcasters. And that made him very well known. He also not only managed to put together three private networks, he also changed the type of television which Italians viewed. So he was extremely able in using the system, in using his political connections, in the sort of sources of investment have never been made very clear. There was one piece which was reported by a Bank of Italy inspector fairly recently in 1977 when he recapitalized his holdings to the tune of 8 billion lira, which in today's money is about $22,000. And that there's nothing particularly unusual about recapitalizing your holdings to that sort of sum, unless you do it in cash, as Mr. Berlusconi did it. Mm-hmm. And that was more than 25 years ago, and if it was a crime, then it certainly isn't one now. But we don't know where the money came from, and he's been asked on various occasions and has never given complete answers on that. So he is a self-made man. He didn't have family wealth, and he is an extremely able businessman. But he has used legal and not always entirely legal methods, especially when he had a law passed by Craxi in the late 80s, allowing him to maintain his three networks, which were then illegal. Mm. And he has held on to them and is at this very moment having legislation passed, which will allow him to continue to have these three networks broadcasting terrestrially, when the Supreme Court said 6 years ago that one of them, that no single broadcaster should have more than two stations.
All right, James, we'll be back to you in a moment for some of the ramifications of those decisions. We do have Maurizio Molinari on the line now from La Stampa. Hi, Maurizio.
Hi, good morning.
You just were listening to a description from James Walson of Mr. Berlusconi. I'd be curious to hear your quick line on him and also Help us through this flap that had even the New York Times wondering last week what might be next for Berlusconi. They questioned perhaps a food fight. What's the origin of what's been going on there?
Well, in terms of the success of Berlusconi, was right, was Professor Wilson was saying just a while ago. I mean, we have here two main reasons. The first one is personal, and the second one is political. In regarding the personal reason, Berlusconi does represent a typical expression of success in business in Italy. To make business in Italy is very difficult. You have to overcome bureaucracy. You have to deal with power. He did both, and he had a lot of success in both fields. And more than this, today he is, for the common Italian, he is the person who has both power, money. He knows how to organize a TV show. He knows how to deal with powerful people, but also with beautiful women. So this his personal capacity in dealing with, in doing such important things in a country where it's so difficult to do it, is gaining for him a lot of appeal in terms of personality. And then you have the political reason, that it's quite deeper. When he built Forza Italia, his party, in 1994, he did represent the new political season in a country that has been split for almost half a century between the Communist Party, that was the largest in Western Europe, and the Christian Democrats, the party that was almost destroyed by the scandal of the bribery. So he was the new face, the new ideas, the new party, the possibility to start again and to build a new kind of Italy.
But clearly he doesn't like answering questions about the ways in which he's been building the new kind of Italy, because what happened when he was questioned about that by one of the members of the European Parliament, Mr. Schulz?
Yeah, that's the point. I mean, the personal approach is so straightforward that sometimes he commits several mistakes, very serious mistakes, as this one, that is not the first one, and I want to guess that will be not the last one, because this is his political style that many abroad don't like, but maybe also in Italy do understand. Let's not forget that most of the Italians do believe that he made a serious mistake in calling the German member of the parliament a capo, but also believe that this member of the parliament, Mr. Schulz, commit also a serious mistake in insulting Italy, not as a country, but also as a people.
So Schulz made an insulting comment, right? I want to make sure we get the chronology correct.
Sure.
Or what, ask an insulting, or a question that Berlusconi perceived as being insulting to him?
Yes, I mean, both made a mistake. Of course, a mistake done by a prime minister is more serious than a mistake that is done by a member of the parliament. But in terms of general feeling, common feeling in Italy, it's, there is a balance between the two mistakes.
Okay, so you're saying most Italians didn't mind what he said to Schulz?
No, they did mind, and there was a strong request for an official apology, and this is why he called Schroeder apologizing for what he did.
Okay,
come in there
and
make a slight correction to Maurizio? Schulz was a member of the European Parliament responding to an official statement by the new president of the EU. He used strong but parliamentary language. He asked a number of questions. And unfortunately, in many places, this has been perceived as heckling. It was normal parliamentary language. It was strong, certainly.
But no stronger than the sort of thing that Tony Blair has to deal with every day.
Oh, rather less.
Right.
Rather less. And the other point, I think, to correct Maurizio, he talked to Schroeder, and the following day he made a public statement in Italy saying, "I did not apologize." So there has been no apology. He was very sorry that it happened. But to be sorry that it happened is a very ambiguous statement.
An expression of regret rather than a formal apology.
Well, he explicitly said, "I didn't apologize."
Ah.
And that was a statement put out the day after Schroeder said, "We consider the matter closed."
All right. And then what happened next with the tourism minister, Maurizio?
Well, with the tourism minister, the undersecretary of tourism, that is a member of the Italian party of the Northern League, wrote a piece on the newspaper of the same party, La Padania, insulting German people coming for tourism in Italy, with a very bad wording. And this is the reason why there was an official protest by the German government.
Right. This was about the beer-belching German tourists who were taking over Italian beaches, right?
Correct.
And this wasn't a soundbite. I mean, this wasn't a quick misstatement in the heat of the moment. This was written down. This was a letter to a newspaper.
Yeah, the surprise was that for a few days the government actually was defending the Undersecretary of Tourism. The solution of the crisis, under very strong pressure by the German government, was the decision by the same undersecretary to resign.
Okay, so he resigned last Friday.
He did resign last Friday. It's very difficult in this moment to say if his decision puts an end to the bilateral crisis that began in Strasbourg in this moment.
Well, Maurizio and James, let me just read you a couple of quotes as to what Berlusconi says about himself. He says he's the best political leader in Europe and in the world. He says there is no one on the world stage who can compete with me, and that out of love for Italy, I felt I had to save it from the left. James Walston, clearly not lacking for self-confidence.
Absolutely. No, this is one thing that Berlusconi doesn't lack. What he lacks in tact on occasions, he makes up with self-confidence. He really believes on occasions, I think he really believes, I don't know, really believes that he saved in 1994 when he, in his words, came onto the playing field, that he saved Italy from the communists. The communists, as most people will remember, Soviet communism died in 1991, the Berlin Wall came down in 1989. There is a rump communist party in Italy. Which still has the hammer and sickle, which still calls itself the Communist Party. There are two, actually, and they fight over about 7% of the vote, 6 or 7% of the vote. But that is the threat. But he obviously doesn't mean that, and he waves the scarecrow of communism, evoking the spirit of 1948, which was the beginning of the Cold War and the beginning of the division between, as Maurizio said earlier, between the Christian Democrats and the communists, which appeals to quite a lot of Italians. They don't dare say that sort of thing in public, but there are a number of Italians with whom this strikes chords. And however curious and comic to many people outside of Italy this seems, it has some resonance, but it's limited. His main appeal, I think the reason why he won the elections 2 years ago is because of his promises for renewal, his economic promises. He did all this for himself, therefore he can do it for me, is one sort of opinion. And remembering also that his coalition won 46%, but his party won 30%.
All right, we'll be back to continue the conversation in just a moment. Maurizio, please stay with us as well. James Walston, thank you so much. Connection listeners, we're talking about Italian Prime Minister Silvio Berlusconi this hour. When we get back after a brief break, the case for paying more careful attention to Berlusconi's antics and remarks, if not for comic relief, then for the health and welfare of Europe. I'm Gail Harris. You're listening to The Connection from NPR. I'm Gail Harris. This is The Connection. We're talking about Italian Prime Minister Silvio Berlusconi this hour, and specifically asking how his place at the helm of the European Union for the next 6 months might affect Italy's perception of itself and Italy's place in Europe and the rest of the world. I'm joined by James Walston, professor of international relations at American University in Rome and author of, among other books, Roads to Rome. And James Walston, I said a moment ago that you were actually in Rome, but you're in London, so I apologize for misidentifying your location. And also we have Maurizio Molinari with us from New York. He is the New York correspondent for La Stampa and also the former diplomatic correspondent for that newspaper. So we had a little fun in the first segment talking about who Berlusconi is and some of the interesting self-perceptions he has, shall we say. But James Walston, why is this truly not a laughing matter? I mean, why has it now become significant what other world leaders think of him?
The problem first in Italy is one which has been around since he went into politics in 1994, which is a conflict of interest. In the United States, there are very strict laws for anyone from not the president, although the president respects them, right the way down to the municipal dog catcher. You must not have a conflict of interest as a public official, and there are state laws and federal laws on this. In Italy, there's no overall regulation of this. And what we have had in Italy since 1994, and seriously since 2001, is a prime minister, the chief executive of the country, who is the wealthiest man in the country, who owns three of the seven national networks, and as head of government actually controls the other three, because the public broadcasting has unfortunately always been very beholden to government. And this is a very serious conflict of interest, because you don't know whether an action which is being taken by Mr. Berlusconi is being taken as the owner of Mediaset or as the Prime Minister of Italy. If you can imagine a composite figure of Ted Turner and Bill Gates becoming president, most Americans would be rather worried.
This is
what we've happened.
Yes, just to continue that analogy, I was wondering, what if Bill Gates bought up ABC, CBS, and NBC and then was elected president and then proceeded to rewrite all the antitrust laws in favor of Microsoft?
Absolutely, absolutely. That would be a reasonable analogy. And it is obviously unhealthy for a democratic process to have this type of concentration of power. In European terms, you ask me why this is now a European problem. He is briefly the chief executive of the EU, and he will be able to push one agenda, stop another part of the agenda. He won't be able to do anything huge because the president of the EU, because it's only a six-month appointment, doesn't have an enormous influence. Mm. But in diplomatic terms, of course, it's worrying. It does not give confidence to Europe or Italy's friends and allies that you have somebody who drops the bricks like Berlusconi has. Remember, 2 years ago, soon after 9/11, he stated very loudly that Western civilization was superior to Islam, and that was just a couple of days after President Bush had to backtrack rather seriously for having talked about a crusade. But Berlusconi, that didn't worry Berlusconi. So to have somebody like that is potentially dangerous. The conflict of interest is dangerous. It's dangerous in a European sense. There's one example of a potential problem. A year ago or so, the Kirch Group in Germany was having trouble. Media Group, big broadcaster in Germany, was having serious trouble. And the only two likely supporters, companies which could bail Kirch out, were Murdoch and Mediaset. It didn't happen then, but if it had happened with Mediaset, it would have meant that the prime minister of one European country had a large interest in a major broadcaster of another European country.
Which would certainly give a lot of people pause, to say the least. I want to ask listeners...
In an election year.
Exactly.
Last year.
I do want to ask Connection listeners what they think about Italy's cowboy, and particularly what they think it might say about how Italians perceive themselves and also Italy's place in the world. And Maurizio, as we're inviting people to join our conversation at 1-800-423-8255, 1-800-423-TALK, Maurizio, let me ask you whether you feel that it's time for Berlusconi to start caring, if he didn't care before, about how he's viewed on the world stage. Now that he's president of the European Union, does that make a difference? I mean, he's certainly not getting off to a great start, to say the least, having this flap between Italy and Germany.
Yes, but before, let me add something to what Professor Walton said on the conflict of interest, because this is the key question. Is it true that we have this problem in Italy, but it's also true that the problem existed before Berlusconi was elected? He was running the main party in the opposition, and in the government, we had the center-left coalition. Now, the center-left that today is at the opposition did not find a solution to approve new regulation to solve the problem of the conflict of interest. The fact is that the center-left, when was in power, did not want to solve this problem, to keep, to maintain the anomaly of Mr. Berlusconi, of having the wealthier person in Italy leading the opposition. So the problem here is that Italy, since the end of World War II, still remains a land of anomalies. We have we had the largest communist party in the West. We had the first and the biggest Christian party in Europe. And today we have the conflict of interest.
So Maurizio, how do you see those anomalies playing out now, particularly with Berlusconi in such a prominent place on the world stage as president of the European Union?
It's going to be a serious problem for him, for a simple reason, that his aim now for the European presidency is to arrive to a political agreement on the European Constitution before the end of the European presidency in December 2003. To reach this agreement, he needs personal, strong relations with all the leaders of the other members of the European Union. To have this strong personal agreement, he has to deal with his conflict of interest. Because, just to give you an example, the leader of Germany or Spain, when they sit with him on the table and they know that they are facing a person that has such strong personal interest, it's very difficult to reach a political agreement on issues like publishing or other things.
All right. I also want to bring Danielle Archibugi. Is that right?
Archibugi, but don't worry. I got used to get my last name mispronounced, and actually now I start to like it.
All right. Well, I apologize for mangling it so badly. I'll try to get it right next time.
No problem.
You teach economics at the University of Rome. Thanks so much for being with us as well. How do you see this playing out? And also in economic terms, is this about old Europe versus new Europe, with Italy liking to be part of new Europe?
Well, first of all, the conflict of interest has quite a lot of economic problems for Italy. In other words, it's quite clear that quite a few economic policies which have been undertaken by Berlusconi's government, and as rightly noted by somebody else, even during the previous government when Berlusconi was in the position, were very much directed towards favoring one entrepreneur, which has a strong presence in Parliament and now is also the Prime Minister. And therefore, to a certain extent, we are not having a government which is leading the economic policy towards the general interest, but very much towards a very particular interest, the interest of Berlusconi himself. And that applies to the economy, applies to laws, as it happened, for example, for the new law about in order to avoid Berlusconi to be charged in Milan. And is this an Italian anomaly? Certainly it is an Italian anomaly. But unfortunately, I am much more pessimistic than that, because it seems to me that even in other countries, we often have governments which dictate their policies according to their own private interests of the lobbies or even personal interests. I've read often in the American press over the last weeks that even a war, such as a war on Iraq, was somehow associated to some alleged interests of some Republican leaders in the oil industry. And therefore, to a certain extent, I think the problem is very serious for Italy, but unfortunately, Italy is not entirely alone.
James Walston, how do you see this playing out?
There's a contradiction in the type of economic policies which Berlusconi's government began with. Many of the policies are not at all controversial, or they are fairly normal center-right government policies. The privatization of public enterprises, liberalization of labor laws to make firing more easy, and so on. These are measures which have been put forward by center-left governments like Blair's, which are part of the Bush program as well. So these are not controversial. What is controversial is what Professor Akibuji said and what Maurizio Molinari has also said, is that when you have specific measures passed, this is very worrying. And while it's true that lobbies and pressure groups work in the United States and every country in the world, and there's certainly a lot of the many suggestions that the war and other Bush measures have been pushed by oil interests and others, they are a normal part of politics. And if there's been something illegal, there's a fair chance in the United States that it'll come out. In Italy, what is the anomaly is that it is the same person who is owning, who is the biggest single the businessman and the chief executive.
And controlling the media.
And controlling
or
the
a
media,
large percentage of it.
And that is more even than lobbies. There have been underground lobbies, there have been overground lobbies in the United States forever. And every now and again, something goes wrong and Congress tries to clean up the act and regulate lobbies. I suspect that something like that will probably happen in the wake of the Iraq war. But it is within the normal running of American politics. To have the chief executive owning the country is not within the normal ambit of American or any other democratic politics.
All right, let's hear from one of our listeners on this from Boston, Massachusetts. Juliana's on the line.
Hi.
Hi, Juliana.
Hi.
What's on your mind?
On my mind is that one of the questions was how do Italian people feel about this? Many of us, I believe, feel ashamed, especially the one living abroad, maybe a little bit more educated and not that naive as many others. We know that he started his party because he did not have the political connections that he used to keep doing his dealings that were not totally legal. While some people may have bought into these new things, many people didn't. Many of the people that are actually in his party are the old people that were corrupted in the parties that were the old guard. So again, we feel ashamed and embarrassed by this. Just to let you know, the Italian TV did not report on the diplomatic accident with Schulz at all. It didn't have the coverage that it had abroad. I knew more from the BBC and NPR that we knew through the Italian television, and this is, I think, a small example of how bad the situation is right now.
Well, we appreciate your call, Juliana. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Maurizio, you're a member of the media, clearly. What do you make of this?
Juliana is right when she's saying that the problem is that in new parties we still have old politicians that the voters did refuse. This is a huge problem of credibility, mainly for Mr. Berlusconi, but not only for him, also for other people, also for other parties, also if in different proportion. In terms of media, what can I say? That, of course, to work in a situation with a strong presence of the main political leader in this field is not so easy, and every journalist could tell stories about that. But it's also true that in this land of anomalies, it's still possible to have a very strong position. Just to give you an example, we has been recently appointed the new editor-in-chief of Il Corriere della Sera, a prominent journalist whose name is Stefano Folli. When he was appointed, there were very strong critics against him. We had even two strikes inside Il Corriere della Sera, that is the main newspaper in Italy, accusing him to be a man of Berlusconi. In fact, since he was appointed, Il Corriere della Sera took very strong position against the government and in several occasions also against Berlusconi himself.
So all right. He Maurizio,
just to give an example.
Sure. Okay, just very quickly, if you will, because I know you have to go.
No, just to give an example, that sometimes the perception is not correct.
All right. Well, Maurizio Molinari, thank you so much. We appreciate your insights on this. Maurizio is New York correspondent for La Stampa. We also want to thank Daniele Archibugi. I hope I got it right that time.
Thank you. That's very correct.
Thank you. Who teaches economics at the University of Rome. And we now want to welcome to the conversation Franco Pavoncello, who is Dean of Academic Affairs at John Cabot University in Rome, where he lectures in political science. Hi, Franco.
Hello. How are you?
Thanks for being with us.
My pleasure.
We've been discussing Berlusconi, as you know, for all the, you know, the color of his character and various questions about him. I'm wondering if this latest flap between Italy and Germany, do you think, might cause enough problems that his government might fall? I mean, how much support does he have in the Italian parliament? And do you see him as being as popular among the Italian people as Maurizio does?
Well, I don't think that the trouble with the Germans, as you put it, are going to make this government fall. I think that this government is rather shaky, but I don't think it's going to fall. I think it's a coalition that is increasingly bickering, but certainly I don't see a governmental crisis in the near horizon. Mr. Berlusconi was voted into power by a large majority. They won both houses. He has a very strong coalition, and I think that the parties in the coalition are not going to allow that power to slip away from their hands.
Do you see this as undermining him in a significant way, though, both in his ability to be taken seriously abroad and also to get things done at home?
Well, certainly there was I think there was a damage which was done to his image, even at home, because I think that a lot of Italians that saw what happened on television were really amazed by what they saw.
And horrified?
Well, they were pretty shocked, and the vice prime minister expressed great concern of that sentence and said that in his opinion he should just apologize, and which he did, by the way. But I think that this issue is really quickly moving, receding into history. The issue, the incident with Germany, has been basically insulated, also by the resignation of the man who caused it. The second incident, the observation, the rather negative observations about Germans that an undersecretary from the Northern League expressed, has been eliminated by the resignation of this gentleman.
Well, Franco, so, let me ask you to hold the thought there, if you will. I know you have more to say, and we want to hear it. We have to take a break first, though. Connection listeners, as long as Silvio Berlusconi was Italy's to deal with, the world could listen and often laugh. But now that he's Europe's president, does Berlusconi deserve more careful attention? Join us when we return, 1-800-423-8255. I'm Gail Harris. This is The Connection from NPR. I'm Gail Harris. This is The Connection. We're discussing this hour the Italian Prime Minister and European Union President Silvio Berlusconi. What does his popularity in Italy say about that country today, and what does it mean for the European Union? Berlusconi says he's persecuted and misunderstood, but what do you think? How do you account for the divide between his popularity at home and his image abroad? You can join the conversation at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. My guests this hour are James Walston, Professor of International Relations at the American University in Rome, and Franco Pavoncello, Dean of Academic Affairs at John Cabot University in Rome. But first, we have a caller on the line from Rome. Hi, Valentino. Thanks for joining us.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I'm upset with you because if this is the kind of programming information you are sending out in the world, this is not right. I mean,
well, tell us what we're missing, Valentino. Make the case.
Well, first of all, I resent the fact that you're calling Berlusconi a crook, a clown, a joker, whatever. He's the first non-professional politician to pick up the country, basically. We had only professional politicians so far. I'm 46. I've been around a bit. So this is the first guy that offered us hope to be able to produce something. You know, we spent dec- decades talking about how great we could be and what we could do and how we should think about things carefully and decide what was good and what was bad. And we never did anything.
So you
the
see him as
a disaster, basically.
You see him as a good leader then, Valentino?
I think he is. The problem is that he's controlling the media, you say. But it's not true, because he never managed to put together a propaganda machine that works as well as the left.
Well, but so, he does have the largest, I believe, ad company, and he controls three of the TV channels, of the networks?
He owns the three networks, if you will, but he does not control them. For example, the guy in charge of the news on the Channel 5, which is the largest of the three networks he owns, is not a Berlusconi man. He's a man of the left. So there is only one guy, a guy named Emilio Fede, who runs the Channel 4 news, who's in love with Berlusconi.
Okay.
We all know that. We laugh about it. But that's about it.
Okay, Valentino, I hope you can stay on the line with us for a moment. I'm interested in hearing what Franco and then James have to say about your points. Okay, Franco?
Sure.
Well, I certainly believe that it's very important to put Mr. Berlusconi in a historical framework. Otherwise, we don't understand what is going on in this country. There is an attitude among Anglo-Saxons to always treat Italian politics as a sort of border in between clownish and haphazard. But I think that that is a fundamental mistake. I think that in order to understand what's going on, one has to understand how the Italian political system has changed following the early 90s and the role of Mr. Berlusconi. I do not deny that Mr. Berlusconi has a serious conflict of interest. He owns large media, and I'm sure that in several other countries he would be a disqualified person to run for prime minister. But I do feel that the emphasis on his control of public opinion is way overdrawn, and it is really not supported by the counterfactuals. I mean, if he controlled the media for so long, how come he lost the election in 1996? So I think that that emphasis there might be a little bit overdone.
Well, James, what do you think? Is the record more on Berlusconi's side than against him?
I think it's absolutely fair to complain about generic insults or dismissing Berlusconi as a clown, which he certainly isn't. He does say things which are perceived as comic in some superficial media comments, but he isn't anything but a buffoon. Franco, I think, should look at the media studies of the coverage of Berlusconi. And in the last elections, the 2001 elections, and previously, it was very clear that Berlusconi got far more coverage than other politicians for a variety of reasons. The fact that he owns three of the major stations, the fact that the public broadcasters do bow to power, with the exception of the minority Channel 3, which has always been left-wing, they do bow to whoever's in power. It was the centre-left before, and it's Berlusconi today. And this is very dangerous when one person controls, is the owner of the others. The broadcast media have far wider audience than any of the print media. And the print media are more critical, this is true.
All right, let's go to Valentino. I'm interested in just a quick last word from you, since you're on the line with us from Rome.
Sure.
Why do you think he is the right person for Italy right now?
Because we need the most fundamental things for this country to become a modern country, an industrial nation for real. I mean, ask your experts there, but we have a terrible infrastructure. Nothing works. Now we're basically like Latin America. We're going to have blackouts because for the last 20, 30 years, nothing was done about electricity, for example. There is no generation capacity. This country is really, I call it, just a country that belongs to the third world. It's just richer. For now. But we don't know for how long. So he was the only hope. A guy that did something in life. He created something.
All right, Valentino.
As opposed to the other politician who just talked.
We take your point, and we thank you so much for being with us on the line.
Thank you for having me. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Let's go now to Cambridge, Massachusetts, for another listener. Alessandro's on the line. Hi.
Hi. I'm one of those Italians that would have voted Berlusconi if only I was in Italy where I could vote.
And why is that?
I'm not a fan of Berlusconi. I would rather have somebody else. But the problem is that, in my opinion, the opposition, the left, is just a worse choice. And Italy right now would really need some reform that the left cannot do, because Italy has been such a socialist country for so many years that they just have no argument and no way to do that. And that's why they need to attack him, basically.
All right, Alessandra, let's see what James and Franco have to say about that. James, you want to take this one first?
I'm surprised to hear that Italy was a socialist country for so many years. And I suspect that what the listener means is that there was a lot of state presence in the economy and a lot of state presence in welfare. It's very significant that Mr. Berlusconi is not a free market liberal. He is not the heir of either Reagan or Thatcher. And although he calls himself a neoliberal on occasions, the measures which he's taken have not been that. His allies, the Northern League and the National Alliance, are very definitely not explicitly not economic liberals. And some of the reforms which he has tried to do, the centre-left tried to do before, with varying degrees of success. There are problems which face Italy, pensions, labour regulation, both of which are problems which the centre-left tried and partially dealt with, and the centre-right is trying to deal with and is coming up against the same sorts of major problems. Infrastructure is a big problem in Italy and always will be, but it has improved enormously. It does continue to improve. I think Valentino shouldn't run down his own country, because Italy is a member of the G8, the G7, the seven wealthiest countries in the world.
Certainly come a long way.
It is a major economic producer, and it is an important political actor within the EU and on the world stage. And this has been true whether it had a centre-left government or a centre-right government. The problem is, we can argue, and the politicians are there to do so, whether a centre, a right-wing spin or a left-wing spin is better to deal with these social problems. But the problem we're talking about is Berlusconi himself.
Alessandro, thank you so much for the call. And Franco, let me actually pose a different question to you, because Italy in the 20th century has been described by some as a kind of laboratory of bad ideas that have then spread to other parts of the world. And I'm wondering, is the newest bad idea this intersection of big money, politics, television, sort of to the ultimate degree?
No, I don't think that Italy was a laboratory of bad ideas. I think that Italy, after the war, actually achieved a marvelous situation in which a country that was really torn apart could really rally around the idea of rebuilding a democratic system, and all the social forces came together and the political forces came together. And after the disastrous 20 years of fascism and the destruction of the war, the country was really able to establish a democratic system which is cherished by its people. And I think that anybody who comes in and tinkers with democracy in this country is going to get burned very badly. In order to understand the rise of Mr. Berlusconi, we have to understand that during the early 90s, the judiciary simply started a process of trials against the then ruling elite with corruption charges, and simply the ruling elite of that time was swept away. So the only political organizations that remained of any strength were the former Communist Party on the left and the former Fascist Party on the right. The center party that really commanded the government for 50 years disappeared overnight. And Mr. Berlusconi filled that vacuum. And the importance of that filling is enormous, because he succeeded in creating a coalition by bringing towards the center the former fascist party and bringing in into the democratic game the Northern League, which was a secessionist party. And I think that that achievement of creating a pole that could then balance the left has been a very important achievement, historical achievement, that I think in retrospect people will certainly define as an important step at that time, at that point in time.
And James Walston, you have to wonder as well, if not Berlusconi, then who? Is there someone else out there who could do a better job than he's doing?
There is, of course, the leader in waiting, which is Gianfranco Fini, the leader of the National Alliance, the man who Franco, I think it was, said earlier, it was very worried at the remarks, the Capot remarks last week in Strasbourg. But there are leaders of the centre-right, none of the same power and charisma as Berlusconi. Berlusconi was extremely able to put all these together. But in terms of invention, the laboratory for new forms, fascism was, of course, the one which everyone refers to, and that was something which spread. What today we have is a term which the Giovanni Sartori from Colombia refers to as videocracy.
Yes.
A video power, which is not limited to Italy, but what Italy
has. But it means he who controls the media rules, right? And basically anything goes for as long as you can get away with it.
That's right. And Berlusconi controls much more than the media. And that, despite his ability, which I would completely agree with Franco's statement, but he is, as somebody who is at the heart, the key, and at the center of a large network of different powers, this is very dangerous for democracy, and it's certainly not something which should be exported. Because once you say, right, it doesn't matter if we separate powers, it doesn't matter if he has been trying to control the judiciary. And it's not only the United States Constitution which makes a great point of separating powers and of basing its democracy on the separation of powers. When you start having one power, and even worse, one individual controlling or trying to control the different branches of government, then there are serious dangers for the system and for neighboring systems.
Well, we hear you, James, and we thank you so much. We'll have to leave it there for now. James Walston is professor of international relations at the American University in Rome. Thanks for being with us. Franco Pavoncello is Dean of Academic Affairs at John Cabot University in Rome. And earlier this hour, we spoke with Maurizio Molinari, New York correspondent for La Stampa, and with Daniele Archibugi, professor of economics at the University of Rome. Connection listeners, you can continue the conversation online by visiting the forum section of our website, theconnection.org. Special thanks today to Stefano Rico in Rome and Rosie Bartlett in London. Our senior producer is Tara Murphy. I'm Gail Harris in for Dick Gordon. This is The Connection.